This is the Big 550 KTRS, the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon. I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan are here with me. And that music is Huey Lewis's Back in Time, which was part of the soundtrack from a movie that was released 30 years ago this year. It starred Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd and Leah Thompson and a whole cast of characters, and spawned two sequels. And my next guest has done a documentary about that movie. The documentary is called Back in Time. The original movie, of course, was called Back to the Future.
We had this germ of an idea about a modern-day kid who goes back in time and ends up attending high school with his parents.
Your parents were once young and had the same dreams that you have right now.
Who doesn't want to see what their parents were like in high school?
It's very clever.
It's a simple movie. It's a human movie.
One moment could change your whole life.
You can't make time travel movies. People don't go see them. Well, you just don't make bad time travel movies. You make a good one.
Those are some of the people who were interviewed for the Back in Time documentary directed by our guest, Jason Aaron. Hi, Jason. How are you?
Great. How are you guys?
Good. I got to tell you, just listening to clips from this movie put a smile on my face, and seeing some of those people now 30 years later who were involved in it that you talked to made me feel happy today. Why did you decide to do this in the first place?
It was a crazy idea that was spawned from a family film that I was hired to shoot about a father who takes his son back in time, and they rented a DeLorean. And the day we shot the film, it literally shut down the town to the point where people were just stopping their cars and getting out and taking pictures. And as a huge Back to the Future fan myself, I saw how just the car could affect people in such a way, and the way they associated Back to the Future. And I knew there was something there. And another good friend of mine did a Kickstarter campaign for a Batman documentary. I said, all right, if he did it, I can do it. And we threw it up on Kickstarter 2 years ago, got our first round of funding, and got to work.
And you've gotten over $100,000 worth of funding, right?
Well, so this is our second. The Kickstarter campaign that's active right now is actually our second Kickstarter campaign. The first one, like I said, was 2 years ago. We'd raised $46,000, which more or less got us through production. We needed a little bit of extra help during production. We launched this Kickstarter about 10 days ago, and have been astonished by what has happened. Actually, this morning, today, we broke the $100,000 mark, and we still have 19 days to go.
Well, congratulations on that. When we talk about Back to the Future, it is a movie that I think has certainly lived well through the 30 years. You can watch it now, and it's just as funny as it was. I'm not so sure about Back to the Future 3, but 1 and 2 were pretty good. And people who are fans of the movie can listen to clips of it, and they can mouth these lines along with us.
Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
The way I see it, if you're going to build a time machine into a car, why not do it with some style?
Oh, my God. They found me. I don't know how, but they found me.
Work hard, Marty!
Who? Who?
Who do you think? The Libyans!
Just relax, Calvin. You've got a big bruise on your head.
Ah! Where are my pants?
Over there. On my hope chest. I've never seen purple underwear before, Calvin.
Calvin, why do you keep calling me Calvin?
Well, that is your name, isn't it? Calvin Klein? It's written all over your underwear.
Hey, I've seen this one. This is a classic. This is where Ralph dresses up as a man from space.
What do you mean you've seen this? It's brand new.
Yeah, well, I saw it on a rerun.
It's a rerun.
You'll find out. I'm from the future. I came here in a time machine that you invented. Now, I need your help to get back to the year 1985. I'm telling the truth, Doc. You gotta believe me.
Then tell me, future boy, who's president of the United States in 1985?
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan? The actor? Then who's vice president? Jerry Lewis?
21 gigawatts!
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88. Roads?
Where we're going, we don't need roads.
It still sounds great today, 30 years later. And when you talk to the people who were involved in this, I mentioned Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd and Leah Thompson. Jason, you talk to them and Bob Zemeckis, the director, and Bob Gale, the writer. Tell us some of the things that they told you that they remembered from the shooting of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to hear those bites you guys pulled. We actually interviewed everyone who spoke in that montage. And, you know, I think what's amazing, Robert Zemeckis, more than anybody else, kind of shocked us. You know, we interviewed actors as, obviously we interviewed Michael and Christopher Lloyd, and we interviewed parts as small as Goldie Wilson, you know, who essentially had a line in the movie. And you'd expect Goldie Wilson, whose name is Don Fullav, you'd expect Don to tell you how big Back to the Future was for him. It was the biggest role he ever played. But when we sat down with Robert Zemeckis, who has such a storied career, you know, who won Academy Awards for Forrest Gump, and I said to him, with Back to the Future, you know, where does that sort of rank in your career? And he point blank said it's the greatest thing he ever did. And it jarred me. You know, I froze for a little bit because, you know, even though you know how big it is, you almost didn't expect him to say that. And, you know, you just realize how momentous this movie was. Of course, he was a co-writer with Bob Gale on Back to the Future. It was important to him. And, you know, Michael, who's dealing with so much with his illness, who really puts himself out there with his foundation to try and raise awareness and find a cure for Parkinson's, you know, the love and outpouring that he gets from the fans and just how appreciative he is and how regular these people are, you know. Just, you know, we were talking about hockey. I'm a big hockey fan. Michael's a big hockey fan from Canada. And, you know, we were just talking about going to Ranger games in New York and stuff like that. It was very normal.
Was it hard to get through to some of these people? I mean, did any of them say,
yeah,
oh, some fanboy wants an interview?
We suspected that would be an issue, so we were very methodical about how we approached getting these people. Like I said, we've been working on this for about 2 years now. You know, our first Kickstarter had raised some interest, and it raised some eyebrows, and people saw it, and Bob Gale jumped on board right away. He's the gatekeeper for the Back to the Future franchise, and once people saw how serious it was, we were able to start getting more serious interviews and more serious interviews. Adam F. Goldberg, who is the creator of The Goldbergs on ABC, he's a co-executive producer with us, and his access was very important to us. They had done a hoverboard episode and some other things just with Back to the Future throughout their two seasons, and so they had some contact with Michael J. Fox's people. By the time we went to Michael J. Fox, we were very far along in the process. Adam was able to kind of help us secure that, and once we secured Michael J. Fox, the floodgates were open. I mean, essentially, at that point, we kind of had all the rest of the access that we needed.
Now, there's one person who we haven't mentioned here who, of course, was in the first movie but not in the next two, and that is Crispin Glover, who played George McFly, later replaced in the next two movies by an actor by the name of Jeffrey Weissman. Maybe that was because of Crispin Glover almost kicking David Letterman in the head on his NBC late night show. I'm not sure. But did you try to talk to him, or did you purposely leave him out?
No, I mean, there are two. You know, the other notable name, obviously, is Tom Wilson, who played Biff.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny because when I kind of concocted this idea for this documentary, Tom Wilson was, I was so excited to think that maybe I was going to have the opportunity to sit down with Tom Wilson and talk about Back to the Future. And very early on in the process, we learned that he just doesn't do Back to the Future anymore. He had done the fan show circuit, and it just kind of got old, and, you know, he felt like he wanted to move on with his life. And, you know, there is no way at this point to get him to talk about Back to the Future, which is a shame, you know, because the fans love him, and he's a really nice guy. Then as far as Crispin Glover, there are a lot of different stories in terms of what happened. There was clearly a contract dispute. Crispin talked about the fact that he didn't like the direction that the film was going in for certain aspects of it. And, you know, finally, like you said, he was replaced by Jeffrey Weissman, who we did interview for the documentary. And Crispin didn't like Jeffrey's performance in the film. So, you know, there's some bad blood there. And we saw him in a couple radio interviews, and he just uses the time to kind of bash Back to the Future. And, you know, our documentary is an absolute love letter to the franchise. So, you know, we would have had him. Obviously, we could have interviewed him and then taken some editorial liberties later, but we just just wasn't a great fit.
Yeah, well, it's not like that decision by Crispin Glover hurt his career at all.
I mean, look, Back to the Future was the biggest role he ever had, but it's not like he hasn't worked since, you know? So he's still done some other stuff. I think, you know, when you really look at Back to the Future, the original, I mean, his role was iconic. His comedic timing, I mean, you take him out of Back to the Future, and it probably doesn't even work. So obviously the second and third scripts were written differently, knowing he wasn't going to be in it. But, I mean, it's a shame.
You know, we talk about Crispin Glover being in the first, but not the second and the third. There's also an actor who was supposed to be in the first and then got cut out of the movie that he was starring in before Michael J. Fox. I've heard the story that they actually shot part of the movie with Eric Stoltz as Marty McFly.
Yeah, you know, part is a loose use of a term. In fact, they shot almost the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
They were 6 weeks into shooting. They had shot almost everything with Eric Stoltz, and we've asked essentially everybody about that, because what a crazy thing to be that far into shooting. And, I mean, on most other productions, this would have shut down the production. Obviously, this is a major budget film, and, you know, they were able to sort of work through it. I mean, the story is that they wanted Michael J. Fox in the beginning, but he was on Family Ties, obviously, and they couldn't get him off of Family Ties, so they went with Eric Stoltz, and, you know, Robert Zemeckis takes full blame for it, you know, saying that, listen, they tried and they tried, and he thought maybe if they keep shooting, it'll work, and it just never worked. And 6 weeks into filming, they had to make the decision to fire Eric. And I believe one of the producers on Family Ties had a baby. And then they were off, and it just worked out. They were able to get Michael. Michael ended up doing Back to the Future and Family Ties. He was shooting Family Ties during the day and Back to the Future at night and sleeping never. And everyone involved with the production, and we've asked this question to everyone, says this film would have never worked with Eric Stoltz. Not that he's a bad actor, he's just a different actor, and Michael's comedy sensibilities are amazing, and the way he and Christopher Lloyd connected, imagine a different Marty McFly. It's almost unimaginable. There's a lot of footage. There's a lot of footage out there with Eric Stoltz, you know.
Yeah.
And Marty.
I've seen some of it on YouTube, and I didn't realize it was 6 weeks into the production. That's ridiculous. Talk to me a little bit about the Back to the Future culture. I did not know that there are conventions, as there have been for Star Trek for three or four decades and other movies as well. I didn't know there was a Back to the Future convention group out there that runs shows all over the world.
Yeah, it's you know, there are so many different things for Back to the Future. First of all, if you go to any Comic-Con anywhere, you know, you see people dressed up as Doc, and you see people dressed up as Marty. You have, during this documentary, we had the opportunity to go to England, and this was a one-time event. But, you know, in London, where you kind of forget how global Back to the Future is, they had an event where they rebuilt Hill Valley. And they had 80,000 attendees over a six-week period. It was 3,000 people a night who came in 1950s period costumes. And they dressed up, and you came out to Hill Valley, and there were 120 actors playing different roles, everybody from Marty and Doc to just sort of invented roles, like the teacher at the school or the guy that runs the record shop, and you were there for a few hours.
Hold on just a second here. Telling me that people go to a Back to the Future convention, and when they choose the character from the movie that they're going to be, they choose a character who's not in the movie?
No, so these are actors. So essentially what happens is there are 3,000 paying guests at this event. I believe that tickets are about, it's translated to $85. You went and you were assigned a role.
Oh.
So as soon as you bought your ticket, you were an egg farmer on Peabody's farm, or you were a high school student, or you were whatever. And then they employed 120 paid actors a night who were given roles by the production. And those actors essentially made Hill Valley run. And what they would do is they would have, and it's funny, they sent us their call sheet so that we would know what to film while we were there. And there were sometimes five different things going on in a given minute all over the production. It was so detailed and so well run. And then you would go in the evening, and then as it got darker and they were able to do it, they would then screen Back to the Future at the end of the night, and everybody would sit and watch Back to the Future. And they did it in a sort of a Rocky Horror Picture Show kind of way, where you know, when the DeLorean comes off the back of the truck, they had a DeLorean there that would come out from the stage, and they reenacted a bunch of different scenes from the movie. It was incredible.
Did you run into fans who actually bought a DeLorean and tricked it out with time circuits?
Yes, yes. So that is a culture, you know, within a culture. What has happened over the last 15 years or so, these different sort of different groups and individuals started building these time machine replicas. They would take a DeLorean and, you know, trick it out. And some of it is for show and for hobby. Some of it you have these people who are so interested in the details and making sure everything is right and every part that's on their, you know, DeLorean replica was on the actual car that was used in the movie. I mean, this is a business. It's a very real thing, and we've met, you know, along the way, you know, over a dozen owners that had it. We had an opportunity in June to go to a DeLorean car show where they had over 300 DeLorean owners who get together for a convention. They do this biannually, and part of this convention, not only are they stock DeLoreans, but they have DeLorean time machines. They had a DeLorean monster truck and a DeLorean limousine. So the DeLorean subculture within itself is its own culture, you know, even outside of Back to the Future.
Is there a Back to the Future hoverboard culture?
So there is. We this is, I mean, listen, anybody who saw Back to the Future 2 in 1989, I mean, this was the one gadget that we had to have.
Yeah.
Robert Zemeckis had done a fake promotion for the movie and said that hoverboards were real. And people saw this and, you know, not understanding the humor in it. I mean, you know, this was every kid's dream. You know, I was certainly a kid around this time. And, you know, I think people have legitimately been trying to figure out how to do this thing for the last, 25-plus years. And there's a company out in Northern California. Their name is Hendo Hover. It's Greg and Jill Henderson. And they invented a working hoverboard that sort of came to them by accident. He's an architect, and he was working on different structural ideas for buildings in the Northern California area and trying to figure out sort of how to levitate buildings so that they'd be safer in earthquakes and things like that and floods. And they realized that they could hover a stationary object. And once they realized they could hover a stationary object, they said, well, what's cooler than a hoverboard? So they invented a hoverboard. They put it on Kickstarter. They raised over $500,000. They had Tony Hawk come down there and ride it. And when we went over there to film them, my entire crew, we were all able to ride the actual working first hoverboard. And it is real. I can tell you it works. I mean, you know, it's not like the movie. You're not 6 feet in the air and swinging all over the place. It uses maglev technology. So it's essentially magnets combined with motors. But when they turn that thing on, you know, you're a few inches off the ground and you could feel it. You know, you step on the board and kind of bouncing on air. It's pretty amazing.
It is pretty amazing. All right, so we're here 30 years later from Back to the Future, 2015, the year that Marty went to when he went into the future. And all of this has been documented in a new movie called Back in Time. Jason Aaron is the director of that movie. When is it coming out? When will we see it? And how will we see it?
So we're going to release it on Future Day, which is October 21st, 2015. It's the day that Marty went forward in time, and there's obviously a lot of Back to the Future buzz and different events planned around that day. But we're going to be out in Hollywood, California for the premiere at an event called We're Going Back. And it's going to be a crazy event. It's going to be a week-long event. And, you know, our premiere is going to be on that night on October 21st. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
If you want to find out more information about it, including how to contribute to the Kickstarter campaign, you can go to backintimefilm.com. Do I have the URL right?
That's it.
That's great. It's been so much fun talking to you about this movie. I have so many more questions, but maybe some of them will be answered. I'm sure many of them will be answered when the movie comes out later this year. Jason, thanks for your time today.
Thanks. My pleasure.
Jason Aaron, director of the documentary Back in Time, here on the Big 550 KTRS.